It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
Good evening and welcome along to your Sunday Night Dons content here live on the Red Tinted Glasses YouTube channel. And for the next 45 minutes to an hour, we will be going through commercial-free Dons content. No, sorry, I was trying to channel my inner Scott Hansen in Red Zone. I'm missing it that much. But I'm also missing Callum on tonight's episode as we discussed moving into his new flat. So Phil Mayer joining me, able as always in the co-host seat. Callum, sorry, Phil, how are you? Getting confused already.
I'm not missing Callum. It's all right.
No,
I'm not missing him. I managed to escape him in work and I'm escaping him here now as well. So it's great.
I know, stepping up to your emergency loan as you always do, which is quite fitting. As of course we will have some transfer talk on this episode with the Dons signing yet another midfielder in Killian Phillips. So more on that later. But Phil, of course, we've got to speak about matters on the pitch because it's yet more capital punishment, as in this fixture, away teams never seem to win, despite a much improved performance, certainly in that first 45 from what we saw in Perth on Wednesday night. Ultimately, the Dons went down 2-0 to Hearts, and things just aren't getting any better, are they, Phil?
No, not at all. I think the best word to describe just everything at the moment, I suppose, is apathetic. I think, you know, the players look frustrated and bored. You know, Robson looks frustrated and bored. We're all frustrated and bored. So it's just, it's another sore one to take, really.
Yeah, it is. And we knew there would be changes going into this game, and Robson himself has used excuses in the past about tiredness and the board. We've heard from them about strength and depth in terms of the squad, but we're not seeing that. It was just the one change, and it was a forced change, of course, with Slobodan Rubicic picking up quite a nasty looking injury. Certainly the talk seems to be that he's going to be out for 5 to 6 months, and Richard Jensen coming in his place. I know a lot of people maybe were expecting to see Angus McDonald come in instead of Richard Jensen, but just the one change. Were you surprised, given the level of performance on Wednesday night, we only saw one change?
Logically, yes. But from the way that Robson's done things this season, no. Mm. You know, that it's kind of common knowledge that we've not used the limited depth really at times of our squad anyway. And it was the same, it was the exact same on Saturday. You know, there's a few players, Povara, for example, you know, didn't have the best performance against St. Johnstone. I thought he was maybe gonna lose out on a spot, you know, maybe have Duke in from the start. But I was also surprised Jensen was in. I was glad it was stuck with the back four. But I think we've sort of seen in previous encounters that Jensen's probably not as well versed a back four as the likes of McDonald is. So that was another strange one. But other than that, I think everything else was sort of as you would have expected it, really.
Yeah, I suppose Duke's going to be left on the bench to play his harmonica after that video of him playing Sandstorm next to Shaden Morris on the bus down the road was going viral on Fridays. A man of many talents is Duke, but we're just not seeing much of that talent on the pitch for one reason or another. Again, rumours circulating around why he's not been involved much this season. A lot of people putting that down to performances. First half, I felt it was much improved. It was back to what we probably expected from an Aberdeen side in every game, not just in terms of looking for a reaction. We passed the ball well. We were creating plenty of chances. However, we only had one shot on target, and that lasted through the majority of the match. So for all the possession and chances we were creating, we were maybe not clinical enough, which obviously comes back to bite us. But the biggest talking point, Phil, probably is, of course, the disallowed goal in that first half. VAR very much ruling in our favour on Wednesday night, but goes very much against us. Do you think it's a foul? Do you think it's soft? Is this one of these clear and obvious errors that VAR shouldn't be getting involved in?
See, it's a weird one. I don't think it's a foul. And I think it's when you look at the angle of it, there's nothing conclusive in what they were showing, really, for Clancy to go to the monitor and change his mind. Jovski wasn't looking at the player. He's made his run. And really, on anywhere else in the pitch, if it was Jovski that hit the ground, that would go down as a coming together. And I think that's the thing that's annoying, is the fact that it's led to a goal and it's not Jovski that's gone down is why it's been turned over, really. So I think it was a bit ridiculous, really, that he has overturned it on VAR. But it's like we can rue that all we want. First 45 minutes was good, but unless you're going to be at that level for the whole game, it really is. It means nothing, really.
Yeah, and that point's absolutely echoed by Adam Heddle, where he said there were positives in the first half, but as always, we play shit in the second half, which of course we're going to come on to. Get nothing out of it. We can't blame VAR too much. And I think both of you hit the nail on the head for us. You know, as well as we played, certainly through the first 45, we drop off massively in the second 45. And that's inexcusable, because for as well as we played in that first half as well, I couldn't help but think that Stevie Naismith's going to put a rocket right up there. Arses at halftime, they would come out all guns blazing. Of course, they're going to have the crowd on their side as well. And it kind of echoed back to the kind of comments from the game at Pittodrie, where Stephen Naismith said that Aberdeen bullied Hearts in that second half, again, probably a game of two halves. And yesterday very much felt the same. It was the tale of two halves, where Aberdeen dominated the first and were an absolute shadow in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think that Hearts even upped their game that much the second half. I think that was the annoying thing. The changes that they did make were so predictable. They got it wider because they seen that we were struggling when the ball was in the wide areas. Mm-hmm. But really, it was more of a case of we just fell apart, really. I don't think, like I said, I don't think Hearts improved all that much. I just don't get how there was such a change in our style between the first and second half. We seem to go from, like say, we had Clarkson, McGrath, even Shinney getting their feet on the ball in really advanced positions and picking out good balls into the channel, and then second half we just didn't do any of that. And I don't get where that came from, because surely you're looking at that first half and going, this is working. Mm-hmm. You know, if we just keep like this, a goal's going to come. I don't get it.
Yeah, no, and I've seen, you know, Adam again posing the question about the team being incapable of a good performance over 90 minutes, and it's kind of true, because we've seen shades of this team be either defensive for the first 45 and then come out all guns blazing second 45. The Rangers game sticks out for me at home at Pittodrie, where we go in 1-0 up at half time. We've taken the game to them, causing them problems, and then just sit back. I was going to say Wednesday was kind of similar, but let's be honest, it was just terrible. But again, we changed our formation, sat back and conceded. We can't be consistent over that 90 minutes. But, you know, obviously, we can't sit here and blame VAR. Look, it's such a soft foul, in inverted commas. I agree with what you said. Miovsky's not looking to trip Benny Beningame. I personally thought on the first viewing that Beningame trips himself. It's the slightest of contact. If anything, as you say, the coming together more impedes Miovsky, if anything, because Beningame's not even going, you know, trying to block Miovsky's run. He's trying to get to the ball. So, yeah, it's one of them where I don't think it's clear and obvious. But look, we said had the goal that we conceded to Graham Carey, obviously they got chalked off by VAR, had that been in our, it had that the shoe been on our foot, we'd have been raging. So you can understand why we were so annoyed about that on Saturday, and Hearts fans probably feeling how we did on Wednesday night. But again, we can't sit here and blame decisions. We can't sound like Barry Robson and just keep making up excuses. One thing that I was kind of surprised from Barry Robson's comments, certainly after the game, was where he kind of seemed to turn on the players. And, you know, this is the kind of when we're going to get to speak to about Barry Robson and what this might mean for his future. It always seems to be when a manager turns on his players, that's when the writing begins to become on the wall. And it was the comment about that the players, he felt like they gave up at 1-0. And a lot of certainly chat in WhatsApps, pre-match and group chats was that if Hearts were to go 1-0 up, we're not going to recover from that. Our mentality seems to be as soon as we go 1-0 down in games, we can't recover. You just need to look at the stats to prove that. Obviously, we had a couple of occasions, again, going back to that first game at Pataudry against Hearts, where we overturned that statistic. But this season and last, whenever we concede the first goal, we rarely turn that round. Now, Robson can turn and blame the players as much as he wants, but I'd also be looking at him and the coaching staff and the substitutions on how you can then influence a game to get us back into the game. And again, those on Saturday lacked any real inspiration.
Yeah. It's like you say, once the manager starts blaming players, you're kind of looking at their time being up. But same sort of thing. I mean, like you said, you know, when we go 1-0 down, we seem to just totally heads down, give up. And I think a lot of that probably comes from the sideline as well. I honestly cannot recall seeing us go 1-0 down and seeing Robson going absolutely apoplectic on the sideline, you know, try to get everybody G'd back up. He just picks his nose or his lug and just looks like he doesn't know where to go next. And I think that's often reflected in subs. Obviously, saw it St. Johnson, the change of formation, bringing on the likes of Johnny Hayes, just for the way that game is set up made no sense. Some of the substitutions against Hearts, you know, you could maybe argue the same. Obviously, Duke coming on made sense. Morris coming on somewhat made sense. But obviously, you know, when we're chasing something, we're needing a bit of end product, he's probably not the player you're wanting on, just with how poor his end product's been. I think it's frustrating. And I think, you know, when you look at how good the travelling support's been this season, it's... You know, we can say, one, it's unfair on them. I mean, it is, you know, nothing's going to change that. You know, you're not expecting to win every game. You've got a good support going to, but just some of the performances that are getting put in, it's absolutely devoid of anything, really.
Yeah, no, exactly. And as, you know, Callum said, that he had a lot of Heart supporting mates. My pal Ross was over in Asia traveling, but that didn't stop him texting me every 5 minutes on Saturday with, in quotes, "Aberdeen, are you listening?" And the fact that we now find ourselves 19 points behind Hearts in third place is absolutely unacceptable. Robson still believes it's potentially attainable third. Look, there is a lot of football still to be played, but based on the evidence of what we've seen over the last two games and the run of fixtures that we've got coming up, I think, you know, going back to the word you used at the top of the show about being apathetic, is how a lot of us feel about our chances of third place. And, you know, now I guess the first and foremost task is going to be achieving a top six place. But I don't know about you, Phil, but right now, given the next three games that we've got, more of me is looking over my shoulder rather than looking up the table, despite having those games in hand.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, you know, even just outside of on the pitch, off the pitch, we seem to be just stagnant as well. Everyone around us seems to be moving and developing and sort of, you know, picking up form here and there. And we just seem to have bottomed out completely. I mean, obviously, we're going to get on to the signing of Phillips from Palace. But, you know, you're looking at like Hibs, you know, you're looking at other teams around the league. I mean, they're moving, you know, they're making moves for players. And even when you look at our recruitment from the start of the season, we've got £500,000 striker sitting on the bench who's had, what, 90 minutes of football, if that, within sub-appearances. It's, I don't know what's happened. The club just seems to be having so much of its soul sucked out of it this past year that it's becoming really difficult to really get motivated. I mean, like I've said to you, I mean, obviously now I live down in Edinburgh, you know, it's so difficult to get yourself motivated to travel up for games, because I'm thinking, what is the point in going to the expense to to sit and watch some of the stuff that's going on the pitch? It's difficult.
And of course, those that are tuning in live to this episode tonight on YouTube, or maybe catching up on audio a little bit later on this evening when it's released, you know, there's nearly 100 of you watching, and this is today marks 1 year since the sacking of Jim Goodwin. The 28th of January 2023 was when the club parted ways with him. We're a year down the line, and it feels we're pretty much back to square one. Look, the club banned about words such as strategy, trusting the process, and I don't know as a fan if I can trust the process right now. There's talk of season ticket prices being released next week, which I think is ludicrous given our current run of form, and heaven forbid if we were to lose on Tuesday, if they genuinely went ahead and released season ticket prices, what that would certain reaction would be. But at what point does the pressure turn from the players and the management towards the board?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you're looking at a double-edged sword. A big thing in football is continuity. If you can have a similar playing squad and a similar coach in place for a long enough period of time, you'll start producing steady success like we had in the sort of peak of the McInnes years. But, you know, I think you've got to cut your losses with Robson now. You've got to cut your losses with some of the board, because I think like a lot of people have voiced on social media as well, it seems like the board is just yes men that don't seem to want to make the difficult decisions. And it's, I don't know. I think we're sort of blindly sort of walking into a really dangerous situation. I mean, Hearts and Hibs have both done it years ago where they've just, you know, made bad appointments, made bad signings. You know, their board's not really been thinking of the actual fans. You know, at the end of the day, that's the core of the club. So yeah, I mean, you can even see it in how they're doing the tickets for Bonnie Rigg. I mean, dropping the prices and putting out 6 loyalty points. They know that folk are getting fed up, and they know that folk aren't just going to willingly go for the sake of going now.
No. And, you know, I want to pick up a point that was left on our last video. Ross Jessamine put the comment in, and he put this in on the Friday night, so it was pre, you know, playing Hearts. And I thought he raised some good points that would be kind of worth discussing regardless of the result from Saturday. At the time of writing the comment, he said, "I don't think the clock is ticking, to be honest. One defeat in six and fourth is still attainable. Respectable performances, Europe, and first domestic cup final in 5 years. We can all see with our own eyeballs that this is going nowhere, but until he is failing woefully below expectations, the trigger won't be pulled. On paper, the board probably think we can still have a decent season, regardless of what we think about performances. The potential upheaval required 3 years in a row will be another deciding factor. He's going nowhere unless fourth becomes unlikely and we go out with a whimper in the cup. Months of Bazball will continue." Now, of course, we're speaking about our hopes of third being nearly out of reach. Fourth, of course, does still guarantee European football. It doesn't come with the guarantee of group stages. And as has been pointed out over the weekend, of course, fifth could also achieve European football dependent on Scottish Cup winners. So if the board are clinging on to the hope of Barry achieving Europe, you could logically see why he is being kept in a job. But performances, style of football, it's not something many are enjoying right now, let alone maybe want to commit to next season. And I'm thinking when it comes to season ticket sales. But do you understand some of the points that Ross made there?
Yeah, no, I understand them. I just feel they've been so flash in the pan this season. Like, you know, European performances have been good, but we've shot ourselves in the foot in all of them, pretty much. You know, our cup run, we did well to get to the final, and then shot ourselves in the foot in the final. You know, it's and I think it's the same sort of thing of, you know, if we sack Robson, that'll be our third rebuild, basically, in a row, you know, to sort of continue on our little American sports theme. We're going to be rebuilding again from the ground up because we're going to lose, obviously, most likely big players like Miofsky. We're going to have a new manager that comes in that might not like half the players, might want to bring in an entirely new cohort. Does that cohort gel? Nobody knows. Yeah. So it is a tough one, but I think, and I don't think anyone can blame Robson for taking the job. With hindsight, we can all go, oh, you know, he should have been self-aware and know he maybe didn't have the experience. The same way as we all said with Glass. But when a club like Aberdeen comes in for you and it's your first big job, of course you're going to take it. Yeah. You'd be stupid not to, because you know that if you get it right, you've got a springboard to have a really good career in management.
Totally.
So it'll be interesting to see where it goes. I think, I mean, I'm on the side of I would like him gone sooner than later, because if we are looking at a rebuild, you would like that started as soon as physically possible. Maybe try and use that manager bounce to propel us close to fourth.
The problem is you mentioned, you know, the rebuild starting sooner rather than later. We're 3 days from the end of the January transfer window. So if you want a rebuild in terms of squad, which I don't think we are going to see over the next 3 days because of the impending future of the manager, it's too late now. It should have been done at the start of the month. And as I said on the last episode, and as I said at the time, when we beat Ross County, it papered over too many cracks and bought Robson the winter break. As Rhys Jones comments here, the rebuild goes way further than just the players. The club are shooting themselves in the foot. Now, ITV drama starts tonight, Trigger Point. Great series. It's series two that starts tonight. And it really feels that Barry is, you know, staring down the barrel. But at what point does the board pull the trigger? And, you know, as Ross Jessamine was kind of commenting about the, you know, club attaining fourth place in European football, those that listen to Sports Sound regularly will have heard the comments from Liam McLeod on the radio today. For those maybe not familiar with them or have not seen them, for the tweet that Simon Faulkner posted, I'll read out what he said. He was on the radio saying that he understands the board aren't considering his position as it stands. They are relatively content with results such as wins over Frankfurt, which is laughable in itself given it was a dead rubber, and 8 of those players that played in that game were then dropped for the cup final, which we embarrassed ourselves in, and also the game against Hearts at home, and are willing to give him time. Talk about reading the room, or failing to do so. It really feels right now that the board are very much out of touch with the support right now.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, it was like I was saying earlier, it feels like they're just sort of full of yes men that aren't brave enough to make the decision. And part of that probably comes down to inexperience. I mean, you look at, you know, the majority of the famous football monitoring board and you think, you know, okay, yeah, you've maybe got a little bit of experience in the game. You've maybe gone to RGU and done a little marketing degree. But really, why are you in that position? There's, you know, there is absolutely no reason for you to be there. You've not shown anything that you deserve to be there. And on the track record of, you know, how certain decisions have been made in the last little while, it's very evident.
Is this you speaking about our director of football by any chance?
No, it could never be. Don't want to be blocked by one of the football monitoring board on Twitter, as I've seen a few other.
But this kind of, you know, as I said earlier, where or when does the anger of fans turn from Robson to the board? Because it feels
like it's going that way already.
Yeah, and I was going to say he is, but he does pull the odd result out the bag. But it feels like, you know, Robson is out of his depth right now. We're floundering right now. We're going kind of nowhere. We spoke about that on the preview of the Hearts game, about the quality of the league, and, you know, the point felt like, so what? Because where is this team going right now? I don't see an identity under Barry Robson. I'm not convinced what we're going to see in terms of transfer activity between now and the window closing. I'm also not convinced we're going to beat Dundee on Tuesday night, of course, which we'll come on to preview shortly. But then we play Celtic and Rangers. Look, I know what our current history is like against Celtic and Rangers at Ibrox. Who knows what we'll get, because that can be a mixed bag in itself. And look, fans will say, look, we're being negative. We should be more upbeat and try and find the positives. But as I said on the last episode, it's so hard to find any positives right now.
Yeah, and it goes, like we said before, it's not just on the pitch. It's just everything around the club. It's just becoming more and more difficult to feel connected to.
Mm.
You know, it's tough. And I mean, like we're sort of saying, when does it get directed to the board? I mean, I don't know how much of the stuff you've seen on social media about protests. And obviously, yeah, there was the big one the other day, the sign up at Cormac Park and stuff. And I think it's you know, Pittodrie can be a toxic place at the best of times. You know, even when we're playing well, you know, it can sometimes still be a bit of an opinionated environment. hold my hands up as one of the first to be that. But you know, I think we're in real danger. Like you say, if Tuesday doesn't go well against Dundee, the environment of that stadium could be horrific. Not only just for Robson, but for the players as well. And I think that's kind of, you know, when I've said about like the protest and being at like the players' entrance, like before the game, is just daft, you know. Still got to try and G them up as much as we can.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you mentioned obviously the Robson Out banner that was displayed at Cormac Park on Saturday night. I'm assuming the team hadn't arrived back at Cormac Park, so we'll have, well, if it managed to not be removed before their arrival, we'll have seen it. Ultras Aberdeen holding up that banner outside the main stand entrance. But to be quite clear, from their post as well, they said, despite the feelings towards Robson, towards the board, it is imperative for anyone that goes on Tuesday, you know, I'm going to be there, whether you decide to muster the effort to come up the road on Tuesday, it is up to the fans there to get behind the team as much as possible throughout the 90 minutes, because we still need to get the results on the pitch, regardless of how we feel towards the manager and or the board, because it impacts us negatively if all we do is stand there and saying sacked in the morning for 90 minutes. That does nothing. As you say, it will affect the players' confidence. You know, Callum mentioned the likes of Graham Shinney, Kyle Rose, you know, telling fans to calm down during the St. Johnstone games, that they'll, you know, things will come right. Obviously, it didn't. God only imagines what that's going to be like for 90 minutes at Pittodrie on Tuesday, the longer it stays 0-0. But it's easy for us to sit here and say, let's try, because I know fine well at 0-0 at halftime, I'll probably be booing them off the pitch.
Yeah, no, and it's one of those things, and I think you see it often on Twitter as well, if you post, this is what I say about Pittodrie and Aberdeen being a very divisive and toxic fan base at times. Mm. You know, if you post an opinion that's maybe not positive about management, board, whatever it might be, you'll often get replies about, oh, well, you know, you're not a true fan, you're not supporting the club. And I think, you know, if you've got half a brain cell, you can balance supporting the club whilst not entirely believing in everything they do. You know, it's you can not agree with decisions, you cannot agree with lineups, you cannot agree with this, that, and the next thing, whilst, you know, we're all still going to be there supporting our club at the end of the day. It's the club we all care about, and I think that's why people get opinionated. You know, it's difficult when it's something as emotionally invested as football is. You know, everybody wants Aberdeen to do well.
And you're absolutely right. Everybody wants Aberdeen to do well. At the end of the day, the fans will last longer than any manager, than any player, than any board member. The fans are the lifeblood of this club. I'm speaking about season ticket renewals. Those that invest in DNA must be questioning that investment. Mm-hmm. It's something I've never got on board with. But those that plough that money in, you know, again, you know, you speak about the comments that we've seen on social media this weekend, folks speaking about hitting the club where it hurts. Those DNA renewals, if they were to stop, that would make the club sit up and make awareness. Now, I'm not, you know, sitting here actively asking people to not renew their DNA, but those are the things, you know, again, people saying ahead of Tuesday, the Scottish Cup game, if fans vote with their feet, that's when the club and the board will wake up. However, seeing that the club are charging £145 plus VAT for hospitality in the Bonnie Rigg game, again, for me, shows how out of tune they are. And similarly, you know, Player of the Year, and I know you're coming with us to that, Phil, in April, which is going to be an interesting event at this rate. But that price has gone up from last year as well. So, you know, cost of supporting the club continues to go up. Fans have the right to be frustrated with what they're seeing and are entitled to voice their opinion.
Yeah, no, and I mean, it's, again, I think I say this pretty much every time I come on this podcast, I'm waiting to sound like my dad. At the end of the day, football's a business. And I think that's, you know, the only thing, it's not the same as it used to be. You know, clubs are run to be profitable. They are run to make money. And like you say, the only way that you're going to have meaningful change and, you know, have the higher ups maybe potentially come more in touch is when you affect the finances and you hit them where it hurts, as you've said.
Yeah. And look, I'm under no illusion that the board and Robson are going to get a lot of the stick, but I do feel this point needs to be addressed as well from John Keelo as well. He says, why are you blaming Robson and the board? But it's the players who get on the pitch. Whatever you feel they're being told what to do, they're still getting the results. And I said it, you know, after the St Johnstone game as well, I personally feel we've got a good squad. I personally feel they're not being used to their full potential by Barry, or we're not using the players we should be using. But, you know, we'll hear it if Robson inevitably gets the sack. It'll be Johnny Hayes will be chucked in front of the media. Actually, probably Johnny Hayes will be given the job on an interim basis, let's be honest. But it'll be the classic line of, we need to do better. We should have, you know, done more to keep him in a job. The players, to an extent, are getting off scot-free in all of this as well. But I think what John's trying to say is that they should be afforded some portion of blame as well.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's players that, you know, you can't really fall too much blame on, basically, Miolski. But, you know, there has been games where players specifically have looked like passengers. They've looked uninterested, you know. And at the end of the day, they need to show a bit more, I guess, leadership in a way, and go above Robson at times and go, look, we know this isn't working. We just need to change something. And I think, you know, I think that's honestly part of what happened against Hearts. Is I think, you know, you looked at like the likes of like Shankland and Forrest, kind of went, this is going horrifically.
Yeah.
They knew where they could punish us, which was obviously, like I said, in the wide areas. And they just stretched us massively and created all their chances. And I think we need to have a bit more of that, because we've got players that are more than capable of taking that leadership role. And we've got players that are way more than capable in their ability to change games. We just need to make sure they actually utilise their ability.
I just wonder, though, how many of the players, if they do shout up, are shot down by Robson and co. But, of course, John's saying, you know, he does give two or three players a pass mark this season and touts the likes of Miolski, Polvara, maybe Barron and Devlin. Of course, Devlin was involved in the penalty award that gave Hearts the lead. Again, another decision that drew the attention of VAR. Any complaints at all around that one?
Not particularly. I mean, he's gone to jump and his hand's flung out and he's tried to bring it back in, but with just the way the rules are around handballs just now, it's such a grey area for everything. That, you know, like I say, if it was up the other end of the pitch, we would have all been saying, oh, well, you know, his hand was away from his body. It doesn't matter if he was taking it back in. So
yeah,
I don't think we can complain too much. You know, we should have probably had someone closer to him for a start. You know, there should have been someone tighter to him for the ball even gets fired out towards Devlin. So, yeah, no, I personally, I've not really got too many complaints.
My only thought was that it was whether it was outside the box on the line. And I think that was probably what they were reviewing more. But, you know, as I said, once we go 1-0 down, there's not much else to say about the game. Shankland doing what Shankland does and scoring against us again, some goal with outside of his foot, fair play to him. Just try to match what Miolski did in the first half in terms of quality finishes, but unfortunately Miolski's doesn't count. And look, as I said, it's another defeat, and we have to move on to the game at home against Dundee. And what, as you've mentioned, could potentially be a very toxic atmosphere. And it's a Dundee side that will by no means be coming up here short of confidence. They went to Tynecastle in midweek, found themselves 2-0 up before capitulating in the second half. I think most Dundee fans will be hugely disappointed that they didn't take something from that, but didn't let that disappoint them as they trounced Livingston with 10 men as well, 4-1 winners. And it's quite sad that I'm taking away from the fact that Luke McCowan's potentially suspended from this game following his red card, but they signed the boy Mellon on loan from Burnley. And within, I think it was 90 seconds, he pitched up with an assist and finished the game with a couple of goals as well, or a goal and two assists. So,
yeah
not like they've used the transfer market poorly so far, or their strategic partnership with Burnley, we should call it.
Yeah, I never even realised that till I'd seen the announcement. I thought, when did that exist?
Nice to see a club using a strategic partnership to great effect. I wonder when we'll benefit from that partnership with Atlanta.
Who knows? Maybe one day.
Yeah, I hope Ronnie Hernandez is doing well.
Yeah, big up the man. but no, it's... Yeah, I mean, like you say, Dundee's recruited well this season. You know, even at the start of the season, they made smart signings in terms of bringing in experienced players, but also, you know, bringing in likes of Owen Beck. The boy is Bakayoko, the striker. Yeah. Like, look at him. He looks pretty good. And then obviously now the boy Mellon from Burnley looks like he's a pretty good pickup. Maybe... A few years ago, Dundee coming up to Pittodrie, you're thinking, oh, well, you know, it's usually, apart from the Griffiths free kick, a pretty easy run-in. I don't think we have, well, obviously on our own form as well, we don't have any innate right to feel like we should just be rolling up and winning it.
And this is the thing as well, you know, we spoke about probably before the St. Johnstone game anyway, about this being the start of the games in hand, and everyone saying, well, the games in hand, if we win them, this is where we are. If we don't win this game in hand, when do people start thinking, fuck, we're really in a bit of bother here? Because as you said, these are probably the games you look at, given we're at home, and with the greatest of respect to Dundee, but just on paper, it should be a game that we are winning. But of course, the game's not played on paper. The form that we're in versus the form that Dundee are in, and the goal-scoring form that Dundee are in especially, this gives me a whole lot of fear.
Yeah, and I think it's the same as a lot of the teams that are around us in the league. Where we've struggled to pick up little purple patches, everybody else seems to have been able to. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they can string together, you know, a couple wins and a draw here and there that really sort of propels them. Whereas we just seem to be so stop-start and sort of stagnate ourselves in how we're playing. I mean, even like you look at Motherwell as well, as another one of the game in hands. They've done well to pick up a couple of results here and there that's really sort of kept them. Yeah, really kept them floating around in a pretty healthy spot. So, yeah, it's... I mean, even if we were to win all of our games in hand, we're still, what, 10 off Hearts?
I think that works out now. So, you know, we're still double digits, which, of course, you know, is possible to catch them. You know, there's a lot of football. But if that's what the board are clinging to, then, you know, you're even looking at it, you know, on Tuesday, worst case scenario, we could be 2 points off the relegation playoff, given that Livingston and Ross County play each other. And as I said, that is when do you start looking over your shoulder? I think, you know, a lot of you were kind of in the comments before we'd even gone live tonight on YouTube. So I might have to scroll quite a bit back to find the comment. And I think it was from Kaiser who said, you know, by a week on Tuesday, we could find ourselves in the bottom two, because, of course, playing both sides of the Old Firm after the game on Tuesday night, it's not an easy run of three games. And if he doesn't bite the bullet after Tuesday, if, you know, as I said, if, you know, obviously we don't want the club to lose, but if we were to lose, when do they make that decision?
Yeah, I mean, like I say, there's nothing more I'd want than Barry to go for 10 on the bounce and, you know, fling us up the league. Everyone would want that, but, you know, realistically, that's not going to happen, most likely, just with the run of games we've got. And I think it goes back to the sort of, you know, when do you cut your losses, really, as the board? Mm. You know, when does Cormac look at it and go, we've invested millions of pounds in this playing squad, we've not invested that same amount of value in our coaching staff, and, you know, that sort of then being reflected.
But. Yeah, and that's kind of going to be the question, obviously, you know, the radio silence that's coming from the Football Monitoring Board at this moment in time. When does Cormac return to the country? Is he coming back ahead of the appearance of the cameras? Because, of course, we're back-to-back on Sky after the Dundee game. So I'm sure a perfect opportunity to get himself in front of the cameras and get that bit of attention as well. And, you know, he's another man that I've seen a lot of people turning their focus of attention to outside of Barry Robson. Do you understand why people are beginning to get frustrated with him as well?
Yeah, no, I definitely do. I think it's again, it's one of those things where Cormac, Burrows and co. have to strike that balance of, you know, how vocal they are on social media, etc. But it's very hard to argue with the whole, you know, transparent when it's going good.
Hmm.
Hide him when it's going bad.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can see why, because I could just imagine what their mentions would be like if they were to tweet after that Hearts game. So I totally understand it. But yeah, I think it's getting harder and harder to almost see it less of an ego project than, you know, the passion. But at the same time, you're not going to find somebody else that's going to invest the level he's invested in the club.
True.
It would be very difficult to find that.
No, and that's the thing, is obviously he's put his trust and he's put his money into helping Barry Robson, and the problem is it's another manager where the job was probably too big for, but Barry doing the job he did last season left us in that position. As you said, if you're Barry Robson and you're offered the job, you're stupid to say no. But I personally think it's been too much for him, and a couple of positive results aside, he's struggled. You know, the thing is as well, as you know, people say, well, he got us to European group stages. Whoever we appointed would have got European group stages. We should have been beating Haken. To come back to Pittodrie at 2-2 and not progress from that, for me, was the kind of start of this whole downward trajectory. You know, the performance in the cup final was downright disgraceful, and don't get me started on his post-match interview, which could have been seen as a sackable offence from many whilst they sat in the Hampden car park waiting to leave Glasgow. There are a lot of things he's done to frustrate, to use one of his buzzwords, the Aberdeen support, but he's also got a couple of results and kind of brought back that pride initially in the February, March times after the dark January 2023. But this isn't just a job just to give somebody a foot up on the ladder. This is a job where we should be looking for an experienced manager, a manager that can actually have us challenging consistently, not just yo-yoing up and down.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, and you look at statistically in his period as interim manager, we had no right to deny him the job. He did exactly what he was put in the position to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can't fault him for being picked, and you can't fault him for wanting to take it.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where people can say it's some sort of fantasy and thinking the club's bigger than it is, or high expectations, whatever. You can't afford to make mistakes at Aberdeen. Like, it shouldn't be a learning club.
No.
If you're wanting to learn, do that lower down the leagues. Do that with a team that's quite happy to rebuild and, you know, sort of focus on youth, etc. You can't afford to do your learning on the job at Aberdeen. It's too big of a club. You know, even Stephen Naismith at Hearts, you know, he's doing well at the moment now, but if he was doing bad, Hearts fans would have the same opinion.
Yeah,
you know,
no, totally.
Hibs would have the same if, you know, they had appointed David Gray full-time. You know, it's not a club that you can do your learning at. You've got to come in, you've got to know what you're doing, you've got to be brave, and you've got to be able to fulfil the expectations. Because, I mean, really, I would say the third best squad in the country, really, and on paper with the players we've got.
And he's, in a weird sort of way, he's probably also been the victim of his own limited success. of last season. You know, he was set out to achieve third. He did that. He had us playing disciplined football. I wouldn't say it was necessarily attractive because I compared most of it to watching what we had under Derek McInnes. But at the time, it was the sort of style that we needed to get us back on track. Unfortunately, we've kind of lost that this season, and I don't know what's gone wrong, but it's just it's not been enjoyable. And I kind of fear for what we're going to see on Tuesday night. Does he revert to type and go back to his tried and tested, in his mind anyway, of a back five? Because, of course, Stephen Gartman limped off and straight down the tunnel at Tynecastle on Saturday. Don't know the extent of that injury. Could have been precautionary. But, again, with games coming thick and fast, does Angus McDonald finally get the chance to start in the league? And, again, it's another change in that defence, a defence that struggled. Changes to the defence can't be helping either. But apart from that potential change, what else do you see, do you want ahead of the game on Tuesday night?
I mean, I would like to see, obviously, Angus coming in, because I think, like you've mentioned, it was that disciplined, organised style that we had towards the end of last season that did dig us out a hole. And I think it's that we probably need to dig us out of this hole, just to get a foundation and just to get a little string of positive results together. You know, as much as he's not been effective as he has been last season, I would like to see Duke, you know, even a front three of Duke, Sokler and Miovski. Because I think, like I've said multiple times, I would just like to see us have a bit of width. Because, I mean, you look at most of the games we get punished in, we get stretched wide, the ball goes into the box, we concede because Rhys is glued to his line. And yeah. I think that really, you know, nothing particularly has worked. So I don't know why he would be against doing something different, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'd maybe like to see a bit more width, and, you know, just use the midfield for 90 minutes. Don't just use it for half a game.
Yeah. Well, Dandy Don says the entire team, Barmiowski, is in decline. What is going on in the training pitches? Well, I'm sure Barry Robson will be using the lack of time on the training pitch as an excuse, given the run in between games. This game, of course, taking place on Tuesday night. I would like to think they didn't get a rest today. I've totally forgotten the point I was going to say. No, I do remember now. Killian Phillips, who signed on loan from Crystal Palace, has kind of been touted as a bit of a winger. A versatile midfielder, I think, was the words that the club used. Can also play as a centre-attacking midfielder. Do you think we may see a debut for him on Tuesday night in possible place of Dante Povara? Because we've mentioned him probably struggling being used to being a wide player. Killian Phillips could offer us that avenue.
Yeah, no, I would think so. And I think he's been a bit of a slow burner as well. I think he was mentioned quite a bit in the summer as a potential as a potential signing. So it's clearly one that, whether it's Robson's been shouting for him to come in, or whether it's been, you know, the recruitment team. So I'd like to think he's probably going straight in. Like, say, Povara, as much as I think he's been brilliant this season, yeah. St. Johnson and Hearts, I think he just looked not like himself. And like you say, it probably is because he's getting shifted a bit wider, you know, with Clarkson through the middle and him and McGrath out wide. So I would maybe think he's probably in there.
Yeah, and I guess for him, I reached out to former guest of the show, Jack Grimmer, this afternoon for his input, because, of course, he was on loan at Wycombe Wanderers for the first part of this season. He said he's a good player. A lot of teams were after him, so, you know, could argue it's a bit of a coup that he signed for us. Jack goes on to say that he plays with his heart on his sleeve, all action type of midfielder. I think the fans will love his tenacity. Well, we're crying out for a bit of tenacity in that midfield. We're crying out for something to cheer about. So surely to be excited, hopefully. He also says that he can play centre attacking midfielder, making runs off the strikers reasonably well. Has some magic in the bag, but we just didn't see it often enough with Wickham. So, again, probably a player, a bit of raw talent that can be developed. We've seen players from England come up to the Scottish Premiership and develop and kind of shine. And I guess Tuesday night and then going into games live on TV give him a perfect opportunity to showcase what he can do, especially if he has plenty of suitors after him as well. So exciting to see what he can offer come the game. If right now it's probably about the only thing that's exciting me for Tuesday night.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, if he is, like you say, as tenacious as he's been described, then yeah, that'll do a world of wonders. I think everyone sort of said we've not really replaced that sort of Ramadani Ferguson type that we had in the midfield. And I think Shinny's sort of hit to bear the brunt of that, which at his age is near impossible, I would say.
Yeah, and I think as Chris Fraser points out, time for Shinny to take a rest. His engine isn't as it once was with the run of games. It could off, you know, I mentioned Phillips coming in for Polvara. You could argue it's Phillips coming in for Shinny and Polvara moves into the centre of midfield and you keep Barron and Shinny in that centre of midfield. However, if Phillips was to come in and replace Connor Barron in the centre of midfield, I think that tells us all we need to know about Connor Barron's future. With the injury to Stefan Gartman and the kind of rumours that Rubisic is out for 5 to 6 months, is it likely, or do you expect us to then be looking at a potential defender coming in again, fans pining still for Matty Pollock, or do you think we will just look to persevere with Jack Milne, who we've seen a couple of times this season and has impressed more recently against Frankfurt?
I think just where we are in the window, I honestly can't see us doing much, just because there's not been anything. You know, normally you've got a couple rumours here and there, or a couple names getting thrown about. We've not really had that. You know, there was that Bogard from Villa, but I don't know if he's gone elsewhere.
I think he went somewhere down south.
Did he go down south somewhere? But because I knew he was sort of mentioned as a potential loan option. But yeah, I can't see us really making anything else.
And again,
I don't know if that's just a time constraint or if that's Cormac's maybe realising it's probably no point investing that in Robson. I don't know why we've been so stagnant this month compared to like the sort of Hibs and other teams.
Yeah, and you know, if kind of the story that was told the other night about Matty Pollock is that certainly the chairman's keen on bringing him back up the road. I know he played in the FA Cup today for Watford against Southampton. However, obviously Robson gets the final say on transfers, is that Robson's a bit unsure on his match fitness, so isn't as keen as Dave to bring him up the road, which is concerning. But you know, again, we might be forced to look into that market depending on the length of time that Stefan Gartman's injured, because we're suddenly becoming thin on the ground in that center of defense. So certainly something to keep an eye on over the next few days, and what transpires from the game on Tuesday night. Chris Fraser there saying he spoke to Ruby on Saturday and he said 6 months. So it's not rumours, Chris Fraser speaking to the man himself. So you know, it's a long time, pretty much the rest of the season. It's not pretty much, it is the rest of the season that we're going to be without him. So we can't really afford to pick up any other injuries, but opportunities here for other players to kind of step up and make their mark as well in his absence. And that's got to start on Tuesday night against Dundee. It's going to be interesting. Is that the right word to use in terms of atmosphere?
I think so. And I also think it depends on sort of, obviously, the more vocal element, the red shed, on sort of how full that is. Because I know a lot of the more vocal fans on Twitter that are maybe speaking about boycotts, etc., are sort of key elements within the red shed. So, you know, who knows? It might be a really flat atmosphere. It might be a very sort of hostile atmosphere. It's hard to tell, really. And I think it also depends on how the product's going on the pitch. If we're 15 minutes of pass it back to Roos and kick it out of play, people will get on the players' backs quite quickly. And I don't think that anyone can complain about that, because, I mean, I certainly don't want to watch that for 90.
No, and I think you're absolutely spot on. I think the way we start the game, or the way Dundee start the game, and I wonder what Tony Doherty's approach is going to be to this game, is he going to set his Dundee team to come out and put us on the back foot straight away? As you said, something like that could lead to the vocal minority becoming a majority and certainly displaying their discontent. Or again, on the counter side to that, is if we come out all guns blazing and have Dundee pinned back, and you know, even an early goal for Aberdeen, and suddenly the whole atmosphere changes, and those kind of ill feeling that's been certainly circulating on social media and growing will dissipate until the likelihood is we concede. So that certainly opening 15-20 minutes is crucial to kind of setting the tone of the game, the atmosphere, and how the game plays out, because I do think the first goal especially is so huge for this game. If Dundee score it, kind of like the Livingston game that we had when Livingston went 1-0 up here on their barren spell, what that was like. But obviously this Dundee side are a bit more of a step above and a bit more streetwise. You know, we pointed out their former players. You've got Curtis Main, Joe Shaughnessy. Joe Shaughnessy knows how to organise the defence and keep it disciplined. A threat at the other end of the pitch as well. So they're, as I said, they're no mugs, and they'll be absolutely determined to come up here and heap further misery on us. And I'm sure there'll be a decent backing as well following the dark blues. And if there isn't much atmosphere from the home fans, I'm sure they'll be doing their best to create some atmosphere. I just hope that when we reconvene on Wednesday night to discuss the events from Tuesday, I pray there's something positive to speak about. But on Wednesday, we'll also be discussing the transfer market, because of course it is deadline day. So it ties in quite well with this game being on Tuesday for us to join back on a live on Wednesday night. Callum should be fit and able, but as I said, the transfer market's still live. So Phil, keep your phone and agent on standby in case you're needed for an emergency loan appearance. But your appearance tonight has been much appreciated. I hope it's helped get a lot of feeling off your chest. So thank you very much for standing in tonight.
No, that's all right. Like I say, I'm like a new man now. And don't be surprised if I'm parked outside your house like Peter Odewingie, thinking that I've signed for RTG on a card.
Well, I'll expect nothing less, but thank you very much for tuning in, everybody, tonight on the episode. If you have been watching here with us live on YouTube, please remember to leave a like on the video. If you're catching up, leave your comments down below in the comments. Remember to subscribe as well. It is free to do so. We don't charge you anything. We're closing in on 1,800. If you're listening on whatever audio platform, remember to follow us on there. Leave a review as well. It helps spread the podcast far and wide, because what better way to spread misery than listening to the Dandies in despair? Until Wednesday night, let's try and stay positive.
Easy days. Sports Social Podcast Network.